dependence on the IETF, that protocols, policies, and legislation must be clear enough so that leakage, implicit or explicit, that is happening, that is specifically unregulated, such leakage is absolutely stopped by technical means or by other means. Regarding so that's the answer I have, and I don't see any leakage like that. But you should talk to ICANN for more detailed information that you can carry on to whoever you are communicating with.
Thank you very much, Patrick. And we have a number of people with us today, so we have to move to the next speaker, and that's Christina Rosette from the IPC, otherwise known as the Intellectual Property Constituency. If we look at the GNSO, the Generic Name Supporting Organization, we go to the next diagram, please. And that's the GNSO, and the IPC is here, intellectual property, on the non-contracted parties house side of the equation of the whole structure. So, Christina, you have the floor.
Thank you very much. Good morning. I'm president of the Intellectual Property Constituency, and as Olivier noted, we sit within the GNSO. Our purpose within ICANN is to represent the views and interests of intellectual property owners worldwide, with a particular emphasis on trademark and copyright and related IP rights, and to ensure that the views of those intellectual property owners and their interests are reflected in the GNSO policies, the policy recommendations that the GNSO Council votes to recommend to the board, which I'm sure my colleague Jonathan will be talking more about momentarily. So what we really do is review all of the issues and materials that are raised within ICANN, that are produced by ICANN, and identify the extent to which, if at all, they impact on IP interests, and not all of them don't, and identify what piece of information that we can provide that can ensure that those policies are reflect a correct understanding of intellectual property issues. We have, I would say, about 110 members, but that number is somewhat of a misnomer because one of our largest categories of members are international organizations. So, for example, one of those members is the International Trademark Association, which is considered to be one IPC member, but it in turn has over 15,000 members. So I think if we were to really take a very deep dive into how many individuals are represented either by IPC members directly or indirectly, we're looking at upwards of about 50,000 individuals throughout the world. We also have a number of national, state, and regional intellectual property organizations, as well as individuals are members either in their individual capacity. We have several corporate members, in other words, entities that are members. And so what we really do is work on almost a kind of a committee of the whole, in the sense of when new issues are coming before the GNSO Council, when new documents are put out for public comment, we will really, it's anyone within the constituency can say, you know, hey, I think this has an impact on intellectual property. I think this is something that is important to us. I think we should comment on it. And then there's a kind of very fluid committee structure that we use to ensure that a comment or whatever the appropriate work product is developed and then circulated within the constituency with ample time for others to comment. In terms of the issues that we are focusing on right now, along with, I think, the entire ICANN community, we're obviously very interested and concerned about the IANA stewardship transition. More importantly, the enhanced ICANN accountability. I think we're seeing, and perhaps Jonathan can speak to this a little as well, or Keith, we're really seeing all of the constituencies and stakeholder groups coalescing around some very important principles relating to accountability. So although we do operate to some extent structurally within a silo, we also are good at identifying the issues on which we can really join forces. So in addition to those two issues, I would say the other two issues that we're looking most closely at and that are of greatest interest to us today at this meeting would be the implementation of the new GTLD program, particularly with regard to compliance with the rights protection mechanisms. We also have had a long-running interest in WHOIS, or as we're now referring to it, Registration Directory Services. So we really don't have a position yet on the EWG final report, but that's certainly something that's on our to-do list over the next several months, as I think is true for the rest of the community. So I think with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much, Christina. And we immediately have a question from Jean-Jacques Sebrenat, and with a magic.
Thank you, Heidi. Thank you, Olivier. This is Jean-Jacques Sebrenat speaking. Thank you very much for the presentation about the intellectual property. I have a question for the following reason, actually, because for me, one of the highlights of this London ICANN meeting is actually Atlas II. In other words, placing the internet user at the center of the whole mechanism. In that sense, I'm led to put... I'd like to put the following question. Without giving accurate figures, but just a proportion to let me get a sense of this, when you speak of intellectual property owners, can you give me a proportion of how many of those are in, say, Africa, in the Caribbean outside of the Cayman Islands, in Asia? And also, an important feature is to know what proportion of these are representatives of large firms from, say, because I think this is really relevant.
Geographic dispersion is? I don't. WIPO might, the World Intellectual Property Organization, I do not. In terms of our members, I would say that about a third of the Category 3, the organizational members, have broad membership outside of North America and Europe. We have, there's one in particular, there's two in particular that I'm thinking of that are from Latin America. The International Trademark Association is simply that. I mean, their membership is global. In terms of the individual members, we do have several members from Latin America. We are always doing outreach. Members from Latin America and Asia. I think we have a couple members who are from Africa. But, quite candidly, we welcome applications from anyone who meets our membership criteria. And, in fact, one of the things that we were talking about yesterday at our meeting was that we are in the process of kind of an outreach identification project where three members are responsible for, respectively, the Latin American, Asian, and African geographic regions, as ICANN defines them, and to identify organizations and entities that could potentially be category, our national members, the international members, so that we can do outreach to them, to provide them information about the IPC, to encourage them to participate, and to the extent that they're willing to allow us to do so, to utilize their communication channels with their members to facilitate membership.
Thank you, Christina. Next is David Antilixing.
Hello. Ah, good. Thank you. David Antilaksing. Jean-Jacques asked the exact same question, so it's a very quick follow-up. Is this information documented on your website as to the list of persons who are involved in the IP constituency, a list of members, that type of thing? And so you can coordinate with persons from the regions and so forth.
With at ipconstituency.org, you will see the list of the Category 3 members. The Category 2 member list is currently being updated, so that's going to be revised and posted soon. We also have the membership application is online. We don't have the transcript yet from our meeting yesterday where we discussed these spreadsheets, but that was an open meeting. In fact, we had people sitting on the floor, and it was so crowded. And our bylaws are also, you know, we do have a lot of documentation online. So the bylaws and the membership application both contain the information as to membership criteria.
Thank you. Last question, Murray McKersha.
Good morning, and thank you for showing up so early for this session. My name is Murray McKercher from Norallo. Quick question, and thank you for attending this morning and speaking to us. From an intellectual property perspective, are names and numbers any different from other technologies? I put it in context of disputes between companies like Apple and Samsung, which have international consequences. And I know it's a huge question, but is there anything different about names and numbers and intellectual property in other parts of intellectual property law?
I don't know that I can answer that off the top of my head without doing kind of a, you know, here are all the principles of, and frankly, I'm a U.S. IP lawyer, so that's the legal system that I'm most familiar with. I think it's at least well established in U.S. law that, you know, domain names can serve as source identifiers, and once they meet the criteria for functioning as trademarks, namely to assist consumers in making purchasing decisions and to distinguish sources of products, that they are equally protectable. I'm not aware of any case law in the United States that deals with IP intellectual property rights and IP numbers. Sorry, I'm going to be precise about that. That doesn't mean that there aren't any. I'm just not aware of any right now.
Okay, thank you very much, and thank you for joining us, Christina. And I know you have to run to the fellows now, so have a good run. I don't know how far. Are they at the other end of the building?
Yes.
Oh, are they really?
So it's completely diagonally.
Okay, I better sprint.
All right.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Welcome. Next, we have Jonathan Robinson, who is the chair of the GNSO Council. Now, if you would look at the structure, that's over at the top of this here, GNSO Council. And, over to you, Jonathan.
Thank you, Olivia. Thank you, everyone. Good to see you all here this morning. As Olivia said, I'm the chair of the GNSO Council, and it's very helpful that you've put this structure up because it illustrates quite clearly the scope of and structure of the GNSO. Although it appears as a hierarchy here, the Council has a very specific role. First of all, it's important to know that the Council is comprised of members from all of the different components. In fact, I guess the way this structure shows it with the blue figures on here shows the councillors that are represented on the council. So each stakeholder group you've got from my left, I guess the same for you, left to right, you've got registries, Keith Drazik, chair of the registries council, chair of the registry stakeholder group, and a colleague is here this morning to talk with you as well, the registrars, and then the different constituencies or stakeholder groups. It's probably easiest to look at it as simply four stakeholder groups, and then that breaks down into different constituencies. And the GNSO exists through the bylaws of ICANN as the place where policy is developed for generic names and referred to by the council to the board for adoption and ultimately into contractually binding terms for under the very specific way in which ICANN is organized. For the contracted parties. The GNSO itself, it's worth saying, is, as you can see, is a form of multi-stakeholder body. It takes diverse interests and tries to represent those effectively through the development of policy. And the Council has a very specific role in all of that. The Council is described as the manager of the policy process within the GNSO. So it's not an executive body that sort of runs the GNSO. It's really responsible for taking inputs on policy, managing the flow of that and commissioning its policy initiatives and ensuring that that works its way through the system and ultimately finds its way out in workable policies that are acceptable in a consensus way, managed in a consensus way through the GNSO. I think it's important to highlight that, as I did when we spoke on, I think, was it Sunday morning? When was it? a few days ago, or a few years ago, as Olivia said, that ALAC has a liaison to the council, and ALAC is able, therefore, to both track the work of the GNSO, but also influence it and provide inputs. And there's that level at the council, but there's also GNSO working groups, which is where the heavy lifting is done, where the hard work on policy is done, and those are open to participation from all. So there is an opportunity to be represented and to sort of cut your teeth, as it were, by participating in any GNSO working group and experiencing what that means to start to develop policy in what we call, as you've probably heard on numerous occasions, the bottom-up multi-stakeholder manner in which policy is developed at ICANN. Perhaps a few remarks on the sort of things we're working on. An issue that's possibly taken an overweight amount of effort over the last while has been trying to resolve the issues within the new GTLD program and ultimately with respect to all GTLDs of the protections of the names of the Red Cross and Red Crescent, the Olympic organization, and the what we call the IGO. I've got so used to referring to them in their acronym form, but the International Non-Governmental Organizations and Non-Governmental Organizations, NGOs, and dealing with protections of their names in the GTLD space. Clearly, we're very focused and interested in both in the implementation and the future policy of on new GTLDs. It's important to note that any policy that is developed is what we call a consensus policy. In other words, it's developed fully through the procedures of the GNSO, becomes binding on all GTLDs. It's not simply applied to either what you might call legacy GTLDs or new GTLDs. It's universally applied. And we also, like Christina, who works within a constituent part of the GNSO, are at a council level, are particularly interested in a couple of key items that are coming through, one of which is a so-called review of the GNSO. ICANN's got built into its structures periodic reviews of all its organizations, whether that's the board, the overall structure, the supporting structures. And so one periodic review that's just kicking off right now is a review of the GNSO. And that's one of the fundamental transparency and accountability mechanisms, notwithstanding an overall question as to whether accountability within ICANN could do with further review and development. Another example that Christina touched on is this one of who is, where for the first time, I think, I believe this is unprecedented, we've commissioned what's been called an expert working group to do substantial work and then feed that back into the process. There were significant concerns with that at the outset because it's sort of bringing something in from the outside and potentially imposing it on. But now the output of this expert working group on who is has been developed. The challenge is to say, well, how does that now fit into our policy-making structures? And in many ways, the challenge has been made to the GNSO to say, right, here's the output of the expert working group. What would you like to do? What more needs to be done? And how do you expect to develop it? So I think I'll just finish by saying clearly one of the overarching issues for many in the ICANN community is obviously this transition of the stewardship of the NTIA steward function of IANA, and that's just something that's been vexing and trying to think carefully about how this might work. And as Christina said, one of the unifying themes that seems to have emerged, and particularly strongly over the last week or two is the necessity to link this and interweave it with enhanced accountability mechanisms at ICANN. It's not that ICANN doesn't have accountability mechanisms. I talked about the GNSO review and others. It's a question of how might those be effectively improved, and in particular acknowledging and recognizing that as ICANN moves away from the stewardship of the NTIA, that's ultimately been described as many things, but you might see it as the sort of the ultimate fallback position. And if that's removed, and that sort of potential oversight that NTIA has provided isn't there any longer, the question is what is the ultimate backstop of accountability? So I think I'll stop there, and I hope I've explained that. It's a little bit of a ramble, but I hope I've explained clearly the role of the council, the multi-stakeholder makeup of the GNSO, the work that we do, and I'd be very happy to hear any questions or comments from you on that. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. Any questions? Behind, yep.
Sí, buenos días. Voy a hablar en español. Sí, quisiera... Johnny Laureano, de AUI Perú. Quisiera, en relación a lo último mencionado, a los esfuerzos de LAICA y a los esfuerzos de las organizaciones que la constituyen, y particularmente GNSO, saber cuáles son las iniciativas o se incorporan estas nuevas iniciativas, las rendiciones de cuenta y transparencia de los CCTLDs. Entiendo que en muchos países, incluyendo el mío, esta rendición de cuentas no se realiza en ninguna de las formas posibles, y que haya yo estado informado alguna vez. Esta es una preocupación de las bases, ¿no?, de que representamos a los usuarios finales de Internet. Le agradecería la respuesta. Gracias.
Yeah, thank you very much, Johnny, for this question. And we yesterday had the CCNSO chair that was with us. And one of the problems, and it's not a problem, I guess, it's the way that things are built, the country codes are sovereign. And as a result, ICANN is not able to tell them anything or even to comment on the accountability of those country codes and of the way that they are run. So it is something that is part of the system, and ICANN, unfortunately, is unable to change it.
Sí, por favor, para replicar la pregunta. Se entiende que el ICANN diseña políticas y el RFC 1590... perdón, Johnny Laureano para los registros. De lo que he entendido, el ICANN tiene en el RFC 1591 una política en que estos dominios de país, de código de país, están al servicio de la comunidad y están orientados al servicio público. Finalmente están orientados a la comunidad de usuarios finales, en la cual... En ninguna parte de ese RFC 1591 indica que esto significa una propiedad para quienes las administran. Y eso lo dice claramente. El sentido de propiedad no debe darse. El sentido de pertenencia tampoco. Entonces, si bien es cierto que ha habido un trabajo, y por supuesto lo reconozco, de parte de muchas CCTLDs o administradores de CCTLDs, no podemos renunciar de ninguna forma, y particularmente quien habla y a los que representamos gran parte de Latinoamérica, ALS Latinoamérica, no podemos renunciar a que esta gestión de este recurso orientado al servicio a la comunidad, y lo dice el RFC 1591, pueda ser dejado de lado. Cuando hablamos de transparencia, exactamente hablamos de esto. Transparencia. Gracias.
I think we'll pass it on to our previous CCNSO liaison, who will know most of the information about this. If not, we can take it as a written thing, and then we can pass it on over to Byron Holland, which I think who would be the most appropriate person to respond to this.
Actually, he will pass it on to the Framework of Interpretation Working Group, and that's what I wanted to mention. We will get this off the transcript. We will take it as a question with notice. We understand that the community desperately needs to know more and more about these very important and often very emotional issues of delegation and of what we are currently terming redelegation. There's been 6 years of work done, and 6 years of work is coming to an end, and we will be very keen to try and help the wider community and all of the significantly interested parties, and I think that's very much what you're talking about, understand this. So we're not saying it's not important. It's not something that can be answered in this context, and we will organise some webinars with your blessing to help our community within the large world understand all of this better. So I'll own that and take it through to the chair of the Framework of Interpretation Working Group.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. And we have to move on since we only have about 10-15 minutes left and we have two more guests with us. Let's have Keith Drazik. You said you could do things a bit quickly, and we'll have take a couple of questions. And then we'll have Anthony Harris, who will be joining us at the table. Keith, you have the floor.
Okay. Thank you very much, Olivier, and thank you for the invitation to be here. Good morning, everybody. My name is Keith Drazik. I work for VeriSign, the registry operator for .com and .net, among some others. And I am the chair of the registries stakeholder group in the GNSO, which is one of the two members of the contracted party's house. So just a little bit of background. I think most people know a domain name registry is the wholesaler of domain name registration and resolution services. The registrars are the retailers. They're our customers. And we have contractual relationships directly with ICANN and also to each other in the contracted party house between registry and registrar. But importantly, in the GNSO context, our contracts with ICANN give us, it's basically the two-house structure where we engage with ICANN and the policy development process together because of our contracts. I guess it makes us a little bit unique in that, and it really is a unique situation, very very unusual, where a two-party contract or agreement, in this case we'll just use the registries and ICANN as the example, has the ability to be changed by a third party. And the third party is the ICANN community. And as Jonathan referenced earlier, the GNSO policy development process, commonly referred to as the PDP, is the process by which the community can influence our contracts and our businesses. So one, as a representative of a registry and the registry stakeholder group, we keep a very close eye on the community discussions and developments that could ultimately result in a contractual amendment. So we participate in the process. A lot of that participation is about informing the process and the discussion to make sure that any implications to our business, and let's just say, for example, the cost implications to policy changes. I think we could use an example of the WHOIS issues right now and questions of, for example, validation of users. One of the possible outcomes from the work around the WHOIS work that could have a pretty substantial impact, not just on the costs of the registry and the costs of our registrar customers, but ultimately that all flows down to the registrant, the purchaser or the end user of the domain name. So these are all implications that we keep an eye on, and one of the reasons that we participate in the PDP processes the way we do. So specifically about the registry stakeholder group, we have been undergoing tremendous change. We were sort of at a steady state of, 14 to 17 registries in the GTLD space for many years, registry operators. And with the introduction of the new GTLD program, we've more than doubled in size in terms of our membership. And that's really brought in, just in the last 6 months to a year, a significant influx of new energy, new experience and expertise that I think has been a very welcome development. It's sort of an exciting time for us. We have a structure that allows for interest groups within our stakeholder group, and currently we have one interest group, which is referred to as the NTAG, or NTAG, the New TLD Applicant Group. And they're an interest group, but not full members, because they hadn't signed their contracts yet. So they couldn't technically be contracted parties in our structure. So we created an interest group that allowed for them to participate, to be represented in the discussions in the ICANN policy development world and the GNSO policy development process. So we really wanted to make it inclusive and give them a home, even though they technically weren't contracted yet. So I don't know, maybe I can stop there and see if there's any questions. I'm happy to answer questions about the registry stakeholder group, the GNSO, and like I said, I work for VeriSign, so if there's specific questions there, I can take those as well.
Thank you. Thomas Lowenhaupt.
Good morning. Thomas Lowenhaupt. I'm involved with the .myc top-level domain, and the Neustar does the technical work for that. Has anybody from the city of New York contacted or participated with your group in the development of policy? And what relationship does Neustar have versus the city of New York in that regard?
Thank you, Thomas. That's a great question. To my knowledge, we have not had any participation or engagement or contact from the city of New York as the applicant. In other words, I don't think we have any participation from a representative of the government engaged in the stakeholder group. They would certainly be welcome to. It's certainly open to their participation as the applicant. They could participate in the NTAG. Once they've signed their contract, they could be a full member of the registry stakeholder group directly if they chose to. And your question about the relationship with Neustar, for example, in this case, as the back-end registry provider, is that, you know, they're providing the technical services and all that, is that Neustar is very engaged in the registry stakeholder group and has been for years. I should probably just clarify for the room, a lot of applicants, you know, the 1,400 applicants who have decided to participate in this program, you know, they didn't want to necessarily go and build a whole registry infrastructure, right? So, I mean, it would have been cost prohibitive. So existing registries became service providers, in a sense, and offering technical back-end registry services to the new applicants. In this case, Neustar is the back-end registry for .NYC. And Neustar has certainly been very active. And I think, to their credit, and like the other back-end registry providers, including VeriSign, we look out for the interests of our customers to the extent possible. But certainly any contracted party, any new registry and applicant at this time would certainly be welcome to participate in our group. So sorry for the long answer there.
Thank you, Keith. As we are very pressed for time, any further questions? We'll get staff to collect further questions, and we'll forward them over to you. So finally, we have Anthony Harris from the Internet Service Providers, the non-contracted parties house side of the GNSO. Anthony, you have the floor, and apologies for the little amount of time that you have left in the session.
That's quite all right. Since I'm going to be thrown off the podium in, I think, 4 minutes, I'll try and make this very, very quick. I don't think there's any point in telling you all about what we do in ICANN. Basically, we're involved in the same things you've been hearing about. So perhaps it would be more a better use of this limited time to tell you where we might be a little different from other constituencies. We sit in the non-contracted parties house, which means we're not registrars and we're not registrars, basically. Our constituency is made up of what you probably know in the world as telcos or Tier 1 service providers, infrastructure providers, and internet service providers. Internet service providers can be ISPs, they can be telephone cooperatives, small cable companies, or those very strange people you see hanging from rooftops with cables all over the place, who are the wireless ISP entrepreneurs and work in small villages and towns and somehow manage to get some of you connected to the internet. That is the nucleus of our membership. The basic issues which concern us, and the reason we're here in ICANN, is to make sure that any policy decisions, any changes made to the critical resources of the internet do not in any way disrupt the way we provide services to users. In other words, you need to be able to send your emails, you need to get into your Facebook and everything you do on the internet and steal music and everything. But we have to make sure that you can do that, which makes some people unhappy, of course, the music industry and the film industry. And we get a lot of flack from a lot of sectors. We are, in our main concerns, struggling with regulation all over the world who tend to send us all kinds of court orders and take down notices, and we're usually the culprits of any complaints of cyber piracy or malpractice. But basically, it's not our responsibility, and we call that non-responsibility of intermediaries, and that's one of the things that we defend as an industry and as a constituency. Regarding what is happening within the ICANN, you should be alerted to the fact that we have a minor earthquake going on, which is the introduction of the new GTLDs. This was categorized by many sectors in the ICANN as the mother of all evils, but after 6 years of struggling, I'm an applicant, so I was involved in that, of course, personally. We finally have a new GTLD program rolling, and a lot of new TLDs are coming live. There are some things that we are of concern. You will see some forums here, or let's say presentations on name collision and on universal acceptance of TLDs. If you have a moment, listen to that. Those are important issues. As happens with normally when Windows rolls out a new version of their Windows and everybody has to buy it, these things usually have glitches and they take a time to work out. The new TLD program may have some technical glitches because we have thousands of programmers out in the world there who program apps for your cell phones or corporate email platforms and all kinds of weird things they come up with. And they have a tendency to define addressing in their programming, which does not take into account the fact that we have new TLDs. They think everything is .com or .net or .org. So that goes to the fact that not all TLDs will resolve in time and fashion as they should do. And so our work as an industry is cut out to get via outreach to all these masses of potential, let's say, disruptors, and tell them, you know, that they have to be careful what they do as far as defining addressing in their programming. Since I don't have any more time, and I'm getting looks from the left here that I should shut up, I guess the best thing is, quite logically, you have to clear the room. I see people sitting there saying, when's this guy going to stop talking? So, standing there, sorry. So I think perhaps the most useful thing is I have a bunch of brochures here which cover the main issues that we are involved in with that have to do with the ICANN and also with the industry in general. They cover some interesting information about IPv6. IPv4 addresses are kaput, they're gone. And amazingly, worldwide, the take-up of IPv6 is not even 10%. So you can imagine that is a little behind schedule on track. And there is also an article here on which will explain what name collision is for you. And also summary of Net Mundial, which I was privileged to attend. And I think that's probably all I should say because, of course, the clock is ticking on. Thank you very much. Anybody wants brochures, can I leave them on the table here?
Or we'll have somebody
who can give them out?
Yeah, pass them on to staff and we'll distribute them outside. I understand we have the next session starting actually so 3 minutes ago. So thanks very much for this, Tony. Thanks to all of our panelists today. And any questions, as I said, send them to staff and they'll forward it to the respective panelists. This session is now adjourned. Thank you.